This is the Rethinking Learning Podcast. I'm Barbara Bray. Welcome to my conversations on learning with inspirational educators, leaders, and change agents. Welcome, everyone, to the Rethinking Learning Podcast. Today, you won't believe it, I'm in Kuwait with Eileen Winokur.
Yay.
I have to make sure I say your name right and say your whole name, so we're going to talk about that. Before I start, Eileen, I'm going to tell everyone a little bit about you, okay? So, Eileen is a passionate educator. Actually, it's Winokur Al-Zayed. Did I say that right?
Al-Zayed, yes.
Oh, I love it. And she has her doctorate. She's a supportive mentor who's lived in Kuwait since 1984. She was an elementary school principal, English Foundation Program University Director, and Accreditation Steering Committee Chairperson. And I was so lucky. I met Eileen at ISTE last year. And I have to say, Eileen, it was like I've known you. It's like I've known you forever. Doesn't it seem like that?
Yeah, it was a wonderful experience. We kept talking about it the whole 4 or 5 days.
I know, it was wonderful. So I said to Eileen, can we try this and see if we can do this long distance like this and have a conversation? So welcome, Eileen.
Oh, thank you so much, Barbara. And I can't believe this is actually happening because we were together in June and I kept thinking, when am I going to see Barbara?
I know, we've been saying we want to just talk. We just want to talk.
Yeah.
So we sat and talked. It seems like we just talked all night long on some things, and a lot of it was about you, your family, and how you even got to Kuwait. Let's just start out with you and your family and your own education.
Okay. So my background is a little bit up and down. I graduated in 1977 with my bachelor's degree from the University of Buffalo in history. And after I graduated, I tried to find work and realized that I needed a graduate degree in order to find a decent job. So ended up going back for my MBA. And right before I left for my MBA, I met my now husband, who was studying at the University of Buffalo. And I still ended up going to Miami for my MBA, even though he was in Buffalo. And then I moved to Atlanta and worked there for a year. And then it was getting really expensive for us to make all those phone calls. And so I moved back to Buffalo and he graduated and ended up back in Kuwait. And about a year later, I followed him. And so I worked in banks for a short time. But when I got to Kuwait, I was raising my kids and I didn't actually go back to work until 1995. And then I fell into working at a school and ended up going back for my doctorate later on and my certificate in ESL.
Okay, so, all right, you met your husband and you moved to Kuwait. Since 1984, and
yes,
that must have been big. I mean, just think about, I mean, when you started telling me your story and I'm just thinking of what your family would think. I mean, just to move there, and some things happened when you moved there. You had to change a whole bunch about you,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there was a lot. I was 29 when I moved, so I had been there, done that, a lot of things. But I had to learn language. I had to learn Arabic. I only knew a few words of Arabic when I first moved, and the first 5.5 years we lived with my mother-in-law who didn't speak any English. So it was really important for me to absorb the culture and learn the language. And I was lucky I was able to do that. It took a while, but I was able to do that. And because I was at home and raising the kids, I was able to spend a lot of time with her. So that was really nice. But the culture was a bit different. And so, you know, I sort of had to integrate into it slowly. But I've loved it. It's been a great experience here.
Yeah. How many children do you have?
I have 3 children. They are 32, 30, and 27 years old. My oldest son just moved to Chiang Mai, Thailand. And he's an artist and is involved in various art projects in the region. And my other son is working at HSBC here in Kuwait, but he's just been accepted to grad school. So he'll be going back to either the States or Canada for his MBA next year. And my daughter is working in Boston. And yeah, she's a design thinker.
Oh, well, we'll talk about that because you know yes. How I feel about design thinking.
Yes.
Wow. So that's why you like to come to the States and you get to see your children and travel all over.
It's amazing. My 93-year-old mom also.
Oh, wow. And she's in Buffalo?
She is in Buffalo, yes. And cold Buffalo. I love her very much. Oh. So I end up going to visit her in the wintertime.
Oh, brr. Did you just go there?
I haven't been there since the summer, actually. I'll be there at the end of February.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you started talking about, you know, getting your doctorate. So did you do that before you became an educator or how did it work?
No, actually, I received a phone call from a friend of mine back in 1995, 96, that there was a new school opening. And I ended up interviewing and I became their third grade teacher. It was a small school to begin with. We only had 85 students. And every day I would come home and my husband would say, "Are they going to stay open? Are they going to stay open?" Because he was worried that we didn't have enough students. And I was the only third grade teacher the first year. I didn't have any background in education other than teaching my own kids, you know, helping them with their homework and everything. But I knew that I had to go back and get the pedagogy. And then, of course, the ministry here in Kuwait said I needed some kind of certification. And so I ended up going back through a program through the College of New Jersey at the time. They were bringing professors here. And so I got my ESL certification. But a big part of my learning was I became a member of the ASCD. And I started reading all about differentiated instruction and personalized learning and learning about all kinds of new things that I didn't know about and sort of absorbed the methods because I was teaching all ESL students and I felt like I wasn't reaching them. And so I needed to really figure out how to deliver the content, but in a way that they could understand it. And so I did a lot of reading of research.
Were you teaching them English?
I was a homeroom teacher. So I was teaching them English, math, social studies, and science. I was a third grade teacher for 4 years before I became the elementary principal.
Wow. And did you teach them in Arabic?
No, I tried not to use Arabic. Actually, at the beginning, I pretended I didn't know any Arabic because I was afraid. The first class I had was only 7 students, and one of them spoke almost no Arabic at all. They were basically, in order to increase their student population, they were accepting all students, whether or not they had the language ability or not. And so, but I pretended that I didn't know Arabic, and so every once in a while, they would find out because I would understand something that they would say and I wouldn't realize. And I would say, answer them. And they said, "Do you understand it?" "Oh, I only understand a little bit of Arabic. Really, really." So no, wow. I taught them in English, but it was really hard sometimes because they didn't have the basic vocabulary for all those subjects. So I had to teach it in a different way. It had to be more hands-on. It had to connect to them. And so that's why I started reading about differentiated instruction. And then that led me into backward design and then into project-based and problem-based learning. And, you know, with second language learners, there's just so much. And so I got really interested in professional development because I was developing myself because I wasn't a trained teacher.
That's amazing. So that's one reason why you've told me about all the conferences you've gone to. You're one of those lifelong learners. And that's why it was really fun to talk to you because while we were talking, you were kind of pulling things out of me and I was pulling things out of you just so we could kind of learn from each other. Because I don't know anything about Kuwait. I don't know anything about the region and what the schools are like. And so it was, you know, a real eye opener for me. So you were there how long before you became a principal?
I was at the school for 4 years before I became principal. And it was an interesting transition. I know from being one of the colleagues, being a teacher, and then moving into a position of authority. And I remember when the board members asked me during my interview how I was going to make that transition, they thought that that was going to be very difficult. And so when I got into the position, I basically decided I needed to act confident, even if I wasn't. So there were times when I, you know, asked them to help me make decisions. I was a very democratic leader. I am a very democratic leader. And so in order to sort of build up that confidence and that trust with my staff, I wanted to be sure that I had their input, because some of them had many more years of experience in teaching than I did. And I remember at one point, a few years into my position, one of the teachers said, "You know, Eileen, you really don't have to ask us about everything. There are times when you could go ahead and make a decision and we'll be okay with that."
How many teachers were there in that school?
Initially, I was supervising, I think it was 12 to 15 teachers.
Wow.
So, and yeah, by that time we had 3 teachers per grade level, and I was doing grades 1 to 5. Yeah.
Okay. And are most of the schools teaching in Arabic and English, are they multicultural, multi-language, or how do they, you know, handle that?
Yeah, we have an assortment of schools. We have actually the government schools, which are all taught in Arabic, except for 45 minutes a day, they teach English. And then the private schools, there are about 500 private schools. Some of them are bilingual, and some of them are American, British, so they're taught in English. And we have a French school, and we also have a number of Indian and Pakistani schools. And so some of those are bilingual, and some of those, depending on which system they follow, are all taught in English. So we have a really, the schools themselves are multicultural, actually.
Well, that's kind of like the United States. We're all multicultural, but it's basically all English, and we don't teach the language, different languages, until high school for so many. Do they start English very early? Are other languages early, or?
Yeah, even in the government schools, they start at first grade. They were starting at kindergarten, but I think now they've started at first grade. English is extremely important here. It really, what actually, I'm a member of the TESOL also, and we're trying to promote the use or the recognition of bilingualism in Kuwait. And we hope that they actually recognize the language as an official language, as official second language. But it really is unofficially anyway.
Wow. So you also were at the university. You're a director, or when did you start there?
I actually started at the university. I retired. Haha. I retired in 2008 when my daughter graduated from the school where I was at for 12 years. And then I took some time off to be with her in the States when she started college. And then when I moved back, I ended up getting hired at this university as an English language teacher, because at the time I had my master's. I hadn't gone back. I was working on my doctorate, but I hadn't actually finished it. And I taught for 2.5 years, but then I needed to finish my research and write up my doctoral thesis and then defend my thesis. And so I quit again. And then I ended up back. The director who was supervising me when I was at the university resigned. And some of my former colleagues who had worked with me when I was teaching said, please come back. We need you to be back. We're making a lot of changes. We need you to make changes. Please come back. And so I ended up back in 2014. And I've been the director of the Foundation Math and English program at Gulf University since 2014, July 2014. So it's been an interesting experience. I graduated from elementary school and went straight to college.
It's really amazing. I mean, it's, you know, you never know where you're going to end up because you started in an MBA and look at you now, you're, you know, in this other direction. But then you decided to go out on your own. You're now, you have your own business. It's called Specialized Solutions. Is that right?
Yes. I'm a, as I said, professional development is my passion. And I'm really passionate about teachers and teaching teachers. And so in 2012, 2013, I started my own consulting company. And I was offering professional development to some of the private schools. And then I hired, 3 years ago, I hired a former colleague of mine who worked with me in the kindergarten department at the school I was at for 12 years. And she has been offering parenting courses. And so that's become really a big thing here. And she offers that to parents and to nannies, aunts, whoever wants to join. The program actually I had taken back in 1992 or 1993. It's called the STEP program, STEP for Parenting. And there are still some things I use when just dealing with people. I found it extremely helpful. And the parents who have taken her course are just love it. And they constantly contact her for advice also.
Wow. She needs to offer that globally. There's so many. I mean, my husband and I took parenting classes when our kids were in preschool. That was required. And I still remember those. And the people that were in the class with us are our lifelong friends. Because what happens is you're talking about the people you love the most, your children, right? And also how you can relate to them. So is there any thing that stands out about the STEP program that you can share that, you know,
yeah,
I think that there's a lot of parents out there.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's really important. And one of the things I remember all the time is that if it's not your problem, don't make it your problem. So many times what we try to do is we don't want our children to be upset. We don't want them to fail. We don't want them to be disappointed. And so when they come to us with a problem, you know, we're automatically in, oh, how do I solve it? How do I solve it? How can I help you solve it? And actually what we need to do is listen to them and see what they can come up with. Because a lot of times they're pretty smart about how to solve problems. But sometimes we don't give them that opportunity because we immediately jump in and, you know, we have so much more experience. So what I try to do is listen, which doesn't work all the time, but I try to listen. And then when they seem to be struggling, to step in. So that, and I use that also when I'm working with my faculty. You know, sometimes we think we need to step in and help them with something when really they just want us to listen. And as administrator, they want us to listen so they can sort of work it out on their own. And so I've tried to hone my listening skills. Sometimes I'm not excellent at that, but I've worked on it for many years.
Well, the reason I started a podcast series is I needed to work on my listening skills and being able to have really good conversations. Mm. And the one that, you know, when we sat down and had our own conversation at ISTE, remember when we were sitting outside in the dark? I said, "This, you really helped inspire me to think about why don't we have more stories like this, you know, where we can find out about each other." And you opened the door for me So that's why I really wanted to talk to you about those.
And oh, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, you made a difference. And
thank you.
You know, you talk about, you know, you offer professional development, and I went into your site, and we're going to put a link to your site. We're going to put pictures. We're going to put a whole bunch of things because we make a blog post that goes with the podcast. And I was like amazed at how many things you offer. What are two or three that stand out that you just really love providing?
I have enjoyed offering project-based learning. I'm a real believer in hands-on learning and learning by doing, discovery, exploration. I mean, that whole idea, that's one of the reasons why I ended up joining ISTE, was this whole maker movement and being, you know, right on, sitting on the floor and discovering the learning. So project-based learning, and I always love offering that because the teachers that take that one get so into it because they feel like they're discovering for the first time also. And differentiated instruction, but differentiated instruction is just so broad. I think one of the basic things with differentiated instruction is just understanding that you're not differentiating for each individual learner. What you're doing is trying to gauge exactly where the learners are by assessing them on a regular basis, and then making sure you scaffold and start where they are. And I think sometimes, especially when we're talking about second language acquisition, you really need to know where your students are in terms of language acquisition. One of the things I've always talked to teachers about is just because they aren't able to express themselves in English doesn't mean they don't know what you're talking about. And so we really need to be cognizant of that. We really need to keep that in our heads, that it's not because they don't know it many times, it's because they can't express it. And so we need to give them that, those vehicles, those tools to be able to express themselves, whether it's building up their vocabulary or their comprehension or their writing skills or whatever. And we need to give it to them at a granular level. And it doesn't have to be differentiated. You know, they talk about personalized learning. You do also, Barbara. And it's not personalized, meaning each individual student necessarily gets a one-on-one online personalized program. It's how do I personalize it so that student feels welcome and involved in the learning, right?
In fact, I'll be talking about that at ISTE. I did get accepted with one session. And one of the things I like, Eileen, is that you're so passionate. You know, we could talk for hours and we can't do that here today. But one of the things I find is that when you really believe in something, you don't ever want to stop. You want to help and you want to share and you want to learn and you want to be able to collaborate with others. So it's going to be fun when we go to ISTE together again.
I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to see you in person again. This was so great. So at least we get to touch base again. But yeah, I have learned so much from you. And I really just absorbing everything online and with my PLNs. And it's just, yeah, I fell into education by accident. But I'm so glad I did, because I can't think of anything else I'd rather be doing.
Oh, you're just like me. That's why I said one of the things that I find, and this is why I love ISTE and Q and some of the other conferences I go to, it's like family. You find people that are passionate about this, want to make a difference, know that it's not going to be easy, but they don't want to give up. And you're one of those people. And to come all the way from Kuwait, when I remember introducing you to several people and they said, "What? You came from where?"
Yeah, and I'm coming again.
Oh, that's fine. So we'll be getting together in Chicago.
Yes.
And it'll be fun. And
absolutely.
So is there anything you want to add that I forgot to say about you? Because we could, like I said, we could go on for a long, long time.
We could. Yeah. I just want to thank you very much for this opportunity and for seeing you again and reconnecting again, and for being, I love following you because there's so much that I learned from you when I'm following you on Twitter. And again, thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome, Eileen. I wasn't sure how it was going to work, so we should probably tell everyone. We played with the technology, and we've made it work.
Yes.
We used an iPad. We're trying a voice recorder. We're trying all different things. And I actually can see you, and it's wonderful in using Zoom and using all the technology, because you never know. The technology is getting better and better.
It's true. And I thank the technology so much, because it's really made my experience in Kuwait so much better, because I don't feel isolated.
Oh, well, I think I'm going to end on that note, because that's perfect, because we are definitely going to make sure that you're never isolated again. you're going to be, this time when you go to the different conferences, people know you, and it's going to be wonderful. So, and we're all going to be able to share our stories more. So thank you so much today. This has been wonderful.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Eileen Winokur. Make sure you visit barbarabray.net and look at Eileen's blog post to learn more about Eileen and all the work she's been doing in Kuwait as a principal, a university director, her own business, and even what she's doing for ISTE now. So look for a complimentary blog post with the resources and links where you can leave a comment for Eileen. These conversations are all part of a bigger picture to transform education. So I invite you to leave a review on iTunes and share or retweet the post on Twitter using the hashtag Rethink_learning. And please subscribe to the podcast and the website at barbarabray.net so you can join the conversations.